Hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Reed's Wrestling. I am your host, Alan Reed, and today I'll be reviewing the April 26th edition of Raw. And a lot happened during this show, so I'm going to get straight into it. So the night starts off with Mace and T-Bar versus Drew McIntyre and Braun Strowman. Mind you, Mace and T-Bar were unmasked last week, and now this week they actually come out without the mask, and I mean, it didn't really do anything to me. It was just watching two wrestlers wrestle without a mask. So it wasn't much of a big deal. Not like when Kane unmasked himself. So it wasn't really much to that if they were trying to do something crazy with them not being unmasked. But I mean, from the start of the match, you can just tell that Drew and Braun Strowman, they weren't going to work as a tag team. There's way too much tension between them. There's no way this was going to work out. So then Braun gets on the mic and he actually makes the tag team match into a handicap match because he doesn't need Drew McIntyre. He doesn't need his help. He doesn't need him at all. So then it's actually a handicap match. It'll be Braun versus Mace and T-Bar. And then Braun takes it to T-Bar early on. He Irish whips T-Bar to the corner and beats him down. Braun takes Mace off the apron, and then Mace gets tagged in, and he actually gets a few punches in. T-Bar gets tagged in. T-Bar finally, he gets some offense on Braun Strowman before he tags in Mace again. T-Bar gets tagged back in, and then he stomps on Braun in the corner. Mace and T-Bar, they're actually an exceptional tag team so far during this match. They're actually working Braun to tag it in and out, doing whatever it takes to keep the big man down. And not gonna lie, I kind of feel like they're more free to do what they are able to do instead of when they were in Retribution, because I kind of feel like they were kind of held down in Retribution, and seeing how much they can do as a tag team, it was actually quite refreshing to me to see how much freedom they actually have now. But the handicap match ended really fast because Mace and T-Bar, they get disqualified for not listening to the referee because they just beat the shit out of Braun in the corner. So then Drew McIntyre runs to the ring, and then he beats down Mace and T-Bar. So then Drew and Braun, they stand tall in the ring and they just size each other down. And I guess Braun kind of knew he might have needed Brew after all, because Braun just gave him kind of like a little smirk. So then now the match officially turns into a tag team match. So then we have Drew and T-Bar in the ring starting off the tag team match. T-Bar reverses a Future Shock DDT from Drew. Mace slams Drew down. He goes for a pin, but then Drew kicks out. Drew does a side Russian leg sweep on Mace, and then Braun gets tagged in and he tackles T-Bar down. Braun goes for another tackle to T-Bar outside the ring, but then Braun runs his shoulder to the ring post, and it was a pretty damn vicious blow. I mean, Braun Strowman's shoulder made a huge thud on the corner of the ring post. Then Drew does a Future Shock DDT on T-Bar, and T-Bar sold that DDT. I mean, his body literally stayed, his body stayed vertical for a few seconds. He sold that DDT so well. So then Braun tackles Mace outside the ring. Braun tried to tackle T-Bar outside the ring, but as he was going around the ring, Drew McIntyre ends up clotheslining Braun instead. I guess it was sort of a little mistake. Kind of doubt it, since these two are heated right now, so that happened. So then Drew and Braun, they get counted out. Well, mostly Drew McIntyre gets counted out because they kept him outside. And then Mace and T-Bar get the win. And like I said, Mace and T-Bar, they're actually impressing me. They're a pretty good tag team. I mean, I can see them doing more and more stuff, but we have to wait and see, because it's only been, technically, this would be their first match unmasked, I guess you can say. So I will actually like to see more of Mace and T-Bar and where they can go, and maybe they can actually be tag team champions, because I see a lot of potential, especially in Mace. I see a lot of potential in Mace. I don't know why, but I look at Mace and I can actually kind of see him going away from the tag team division and being a singles competitor, and possibly actually maybe in the future going for a WWE championship. But then again, T-Bar might be the underdog and no one might be looking at him that way. And who knows, maybe he can be the one to end up actually becoming more than what he is. So then after the match, Braun Strowman power slams Drew McIntyre. And like I said, Braun and Drew as a tag team, they do not work at all. These two are heated. They don't like each other. I mean, it was coming. We knew that one of them was just going to beat the shit out of the other person after a match. So then we move on to Drew McIntyre and Adam Pearce backstage. And Drew McIntyre is super direct to Adam Pearce. He says he wants a match with Braun Strowman. And then Adam Pearce says yes. And then Drew just walks away because he knew Adam Pearce was going to give him a lecture of like why he can't do it or like why he should kind of wait. And Drew was like, nah, fuck that. I'm leaving. Then we have Miz TV. And we have, during Miz TV, we have Elias and Jackson Ryker already in the ring. And of course, Elias has his trusty guitar. And I'm pretty sure he's going to perform a song for us. But The Miz, again, he takes full credit on Bad Bunny selling out his tour and making him a superstar. I mean, The Miz is milking it. I mean, The Miz is going to take so much credit for everything Bad Bunny does. I mean, Bad Bunny can create a toilet that can talk, and then The Miz will be like, I gave him the idea when we were wrestling in the ring or something. You know, The Miz is just, he's gold when it comes to taking credit. And surprisingly enough, they decided to perform an unplugged version of Hey Hey Hop Hop. And I'm not gonna lie, when they started performing it, it was actually not that bad. Mind you, the real Hey Hey Hip Hop song, it is kind of catchy, I'm not gonna lie. I mean, I might just jam to it in my car, but the unplugged version, it was actually like really, really good. Like, they actually had good harmonies going and stuff. I mean, it was kind of out of nowhere and so random, but so good. So then we move on to Damian Priest, Xavier Woods, and Kofi Kingston versus Elias, Jackson Ryker, and The Miz in a six-man tag match. So, unfortunately, during this match, my cable decided to go off, or my cable boss decided to act up, and I basically missed the majority of like the first half of the match. So unfortunately, I only got a few glimpses of the match and a few highlights of the match, so bear with me, because I mean, you know how cable is. Cable boxes, you're watching something great, the cable goes out, but you're watching something boring, your cable stays great. So anyways, we have Miz kicks Kofi's chest, and then Kofi does an SOS to The Miz. Damian Priest takes out Jackson Ryker and Elias with a dive from the ring to the outside. Damian does a flying elbow to Elias in the corner. Damian Priest does a massive clothesline to Elias. I mean, Elias was seconds from turning inside out. Damian Priest spin kicks off the top rope to Elias. The Miz tries to suplex Damian Priest, but Damian Priest reverses it into his own suplex. Elias does a simple key on Woods. He goes for a pin. Woods kicks out. And then they triple team Jackson Ryker. Damian goes for the pin. Ryker kicks out. And by triple team, I mean, what was it? Damian Priest and Xavier Woods held on to Jackson Ryker. And then Kofi just jumped off the top rope to a drop kick. And that was the triple team, really. Damian then launches himself to the outside of the ring again to Miz and Morrison. And then Xavier Woods does an inside cradle on Jackson Ryker, and he gets the win. So Damian Priest, Kofi Kingston, and Xavier Woods win. Did I miss much of this match? No, not really. This was really just a show filler. We didn't even have any story going forward with Damian Priest and The Miz. Really, this was really small of a show filler. Unless I missed it when my cable went out in the beginning. But I didn't see anything that can forward the storyline between Damian Priest and The Miz. And again, I am one of those people that just feel like they should just get over this. This storyline should have ended after WrestleMania. That's it. They should find Damian Priest a new opponent in The Miz. And Morrison should just move on to do something else that can actually, you know, make them bigger. So then we have Sonya, and she's walking backstage. Sonya Deville, she's walking backstage with a little smirk on her face, and she opens the door and she lays Charlotte Flair into the building. Mind you, Charlotte Flair is suspended for attacking an official in the ring, and she was fined $100,000. But of course, it's kayfabe. She wasn't really suspended. It's just she was going to get dental work, so she needed to have time off. No big deal. But I'm going to say that is probably the fastest like suspension lift I've ever seen in WWE history. Usually they work it for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or even a month, or sometimes even months. They work it and then they come back, kind of like that. But with Charlotte just getting suspended for, basically a week, I mean, it was the fastest suspension. That's all I can say, really. And I'm glad she's back. I mean, she's the best woman heel we have right now. So there's that. We have Sonya Deville in the ring, and she welcomes Charlotte Flair to the ring. And then we see that the WWE official is in the ring, Eddie Orengo, the referee that she attacked last week. And Charlotte is in the ring to speak of her actions last week, and she has to apologize, and she apologizes to the WWE universe and to the referee Eddie Orengo. And though her apology was a little bit too sarcastic, but then again, that is her way of saying I'm sorry. She basically was just like, dude, I'm sorry, whatever, can we move on? And then Eddie Orengo, the referee, accepts her apology, but he says that if he knew that Rhea Ripley had interfered, Charlotte Flair would have won the winner. So then Charlotte Flair tells Eddie Orengo that, oh, so this is your fault too, so you should apologize to me. And okay, so then Eddie Orengo does apologize to Charlotte, and then Charlotte just says, good boy. And I'm like, wow, what a bitch. I love it. And then Sonya Deville says that her suspension is officially lifted. And like I said, that is probably the fastest suspension in WWE history. I mean, she's the queen, whatever. I guess, you have to apologize to her, even if it's her fault. If you did something wrong, you have to apologize. So why not? So then we have Sonya Deville and Charlotte. They meet Adam Pearce backstage, and he is pissed that Sonya Deville is taking advantage of her power and bringing back Charlotte. He says something quietly, but I couldn't hear it, and then he just walks away. But I'm pretty sure on SmackDown, they're going to show something that Sonya Deville is probably going to get in trouble. Sheamus Open Challenge. Again, another week of a Sheamus Open Challenge. And looking at Sheamus and him being the United States champion, I can honestly say that he's probably one of the cockiest United States champions we've ever had. Maybe aside of John Cena. But I feel like Sheamus is actually the cockiest United States champion we've ever had that I can think of right now. I'm not probably missing someone, but it seems like it. So you're probably wondering who answered Sheamus' open challenge. Mind you, it's not for the United States Championship. So I don't know what the hell is the point of doing open challenge if you're not going to put the belt on the line. So Humberto Carrillo accepts the challenge again. And okay, might as well get some TV time. Sure, why not? But then Sheamus, again, he takes some cheap shots to Humberto before the belt even rings. Humberto jumps on Sheamus' back and actually gets some punches in. He gets some offense, and finally, he actually puts Sheamus down. And then Humberto dives through the ropes to Sheamus outside, and he sends Sheamus to the back of the announcer table. I mean, he, launches him. And again, this wasn't even a challenge. It was like a freaking open beatdown, because for 2 weeks in a row, there's been no bell ringing. There hasn't even been a referee in the ring. So when I saw Sheamus in the ring, there was a referee, I was like, okay, this is going to be a random beatdown, and that's it. So, I mean, I don't know what's the point of calling it an open challenge if technically no one's even going to challenge you, if you're just going to beat them up and then just walk away. I mean, sure, or show that, like, hey, I'm the United States champion. I don't give a fuck about what you guys think, but I mean, just have one match at least. You can have one match with a referee, then the next week and have another beatdown, kind of keep the cycle going. But I mean, if it's every week that's going to be a quote-unquote beatdown, what's the point of even doing a challenge? You might as well just walk backstage and just see someone that you don't like and just beat them up, and it'll just save you time from walking to the ring. So there's that. Then we have the almighty Bobby Lashley in the ring. And Bobby Lashley starts by saying how he dominated Drew at WrestleMania, and how Drew McIntyre is basically a piece of gum stuck on his shoe that he can't get rid of. And then Lashley continues to say how Adam Pearce is making his match at WrestleMania Backlash a potential triple threat match, and it's disrespectful without consulting him or MVP. And yes, so during Raw, there is going to be the main event is Drew McIntyre versus Braun Strowman, and if Braun Strowman wins the match, the championship match that's supposed to be Drew McIntyre and Bobby Lashley at WrestleMania Backlash would turn into a triple threat match if Braun Strowman wins. But during this segment, Bobby Lashley is super confident that he will leave Backlash still as champion. And I do hope he does leave as champion, because this guy is money. This guy is milking his heel presence. He is like that old school champion, like a big guy that's the champion. He's just like silently, well, not even silently, but he's just like, you know, like walking through backstage. He gives you that presence. It's like, yo, I am the champion. I am the guy. Don't mess with me, because I will embarrass you. And I love that about Bobby Lashley. And I've said it so many times since he's won the championship. He does deserve this opportunity. I mean, 16 years to become champion. I mean, and during those 16 years, I mean, leaving WWE, going to another promotion, and then coming back to WWE, and his comeback, he actually, you know, is doing way more than what we expected to do. It's great. And I'm not gonna lie, I kind of like seeing him as ECW champion back then. And back then, I don't know, I just loved it. So then we have probably the randomest tag team we can think of, but I loved it so much. We have Riddle and Randy Orton versus Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander. And the name of Riddle and Randy Orton's tag team name is RK-Bro. And I'm not going to lie, it sounds good. I mean, it sounds good. And I personally appreciate Randy Orton for putting younger talent over like Riddle last week. Like, Randy Orton is that type of guy. As much as like he might seem like a dick in person or in the show, whatever, He does know where when there is talent in front of him, and he will actually do anything to make that talent grow. And I guess it'll kind of go back to when how Triple H and Ric Flair, you know, they saw Randy Orton, they knew he had talent, they put him over so much to kind of get him going. And then, you know, he was out of Evolution. It was kind of, I remember when I saw Triple H giving the thumbs down and dropping, and Batista dropping Randy Orton when Randy Orton was World Heavyweight Champion back in 2004. I kind of saw that as Triple H kind of telling Randy Orton, hey, you've done your part here. Now it's time for you to be by yourself and go, because I've taught you everything I can. So I kind of feel like maybe Randy Orton can do this with Riddle. He can kind of make Riddle into a champion, because Riddle is gold. I mean, he is one of the top superstars for me right now that can actually, in the next year or two, can actually go up the ladder and go against, I don't know, the big guy. I mean, he can go against Roman Reigns, for all I know, for a championship, because I can see Riddle learning more from Randy Orton. And as for Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander, Lord have mercy, they've really become a tag team that you just throw into matches for no reason. There's like no context with them. They're just like almost like a tag team jobber without being a jobber, because you have two really talented wrestlers. So, I mean, that is the fate that they're in right now, because they left the Hurt Business. So it kind of hurts me, because these two are really good wrestlers. But hopefully they can actually go on and do something more than what they're given. So as for the match, Riddle and Cedric start the match. Riddle quickly takes Cedric down. Shelton gets tagged in. Shelton Benjamin extends Riddle's legs, and it's a smart strategy, as Riddle, he is a kickboxer, so he does need his legs. So Cedric gets tagged in. He exploits Riddle's injured leg more. Cedric and Shelton both dropkick Riddle's leg. And during the match, Cedric and Shelton Benjamin are actually doing a really good job keeping Riddle away from Randy Orton, doing a really good job and keeping Riddle's leg injured and grounded, because this guy's a high flyer. But then Riddle finds an opening and tags in Randy Orton. Randy Orton side slams Shelton Benjamin. Randy then captures Cedric Alexander in midair with an RKO. Vintage Randy Orton there, keeping his eye on everyone. Randy Orton does his rope DDT, but as he does the rope DDT, you can see Riddle wanting the tag, and then Randy Orton just hesitates to tag him in. But then he ends up tagging Riddle in, and then Riddle does a floating bro. Riddle and Randy Orton win the match. And there was a bit of hesitation with Randy, you know, how he wanted to, when Riddle wanted the tag, you know, maybe, I don't know, Randy Orton wanted the victory. But at the end of, the night, I mean, you can see that Randy Orton does have some sort of respect for Riddle, because when he was walking away, he was just smiling when Riddle was screaming out RK bro. So he has some sort of respect for Riddle, and that little smirk on his face that he had when he was leaving, it says a thousand stories. So then we have a 6-woman tag team match. We have Asuka, Lana, and Naomi versus Shayna Baszler, Nia Jax, and Rhea Ripley. There has been so many women tag team battles lately, and I kind of feel like they might not have that much stories for most of the women wrestlers right now, besides like Rhea Ripley, Charlotte, Asuka, and Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler, really, because, you know, with them and Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke. So then, as the match starts, we have Asuka and Shayna. They start the match off. Shayna and Asuka grapple around the ring. Rhea gets tagged in. She tosses Asuka aside like a rag doll, basically. Naomi gets tagged in and dives to Rhea. Lana gets tagged in and goes for a pin. Rhea kicks out. Rhea suplexes Lana, goes for a pin. Lana kicks out. Rhea keeps Lana grounded with a few submissions. And then, of course, what we all expected would happen, Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke, they make their way to the ring, and they drop a barrel of water on Shayna, and then Nia Jax slips on the water. Okay, now they're just selling those slips. That now it's like every other week, Nia's going to slip somewhere until, like, what's like? They're going to have a slipping match? Because it's almost getting like it's going kind of like a boring joke. You said it so many times that I know it's coming. It's not funny anymore. But we have Shayna Baszler still in the ring, and she stomps on Lana's arm. Asuka gets tagged in, and she tackles down Shayna, Nia, and Rhea. I mean, she is on fire when she gets tagged in. Nia Jax slams Asuka. She then drops an elbow, goes for a pin. Asuka kicks out. Nia Jax does a Samoan drop on Asuka. Then Rhea Ripley does a riptide on Naomi. And then Nia Jax does a leg drop on Lana. And Nia, Shayna, and Rhea get the win. Personally, I don't know where they're going with this. Though, I mean, with Nia and Shayna, Mandy and Dana, I can see where they're going. Sure, they're going for a match. Probably a WrestleMania Backlash, of course. Makes sense. But as for like Asuka and Rhea, I mean, you know, they should have a rematch. And I mean, it's gonna be a triple threat match for all we know. I just see it coming. And that was pretty much it for the 6-woman tag team match. So then we move on to, again, my weekly part that I wait for every single Monday night, Alexa's Playground. Though she hasn't really been saying much, it's only been her on the swing with her new friend Lily. I just enjoy seeing this what next creepy stuff she is gonna see, and I can see that kind of like the officials backstage are kind of seeing that, okay, Alexa's been at this playground for like since WrestleMania, and maybe it's time we kind of move her to the ring, kind of away from the playground, to kind of keep it fresh. Because if she's gonna be in the playground for, let's say, a month, it's gonna be like, okay. And mind you, there was no Firefly Funhouse in this episode of Raw, so they're kind of that's the kind of like the difference I can tell, like where Firefly Funhouse, they kind of save it for like another week, you know. It's like a week yes, a week no, you know. But then with Alexa Playground, it's been like every week. Like, I understand that they want to play her character more, they want to get her like attached to us, but why not kind of do that kind of formula where you have like Alexa Playground 1 week, and then the next week you don't? So it kind of gives that mysterious thing of like, okay, why was she here on Raw? And then the following week she can give an explanation that, oh, like I was, I don't know, killing someone with Lily or something, you know. So As for Alexis Playground, she starts talking more about how Lily understands her, how she's basically her angel and devil on her shoulder. And then Alexa Bliss goes into this like almost like meditation type thing where she wants us to look into her eyes and to think about twisted thoughts, dark thoughts, anything like that's bad. And then she asks us to think about something peaceful. And then they start showing, you know, like beautiful sceneries around the world, you know, grass fields and stuff. And out of nowhere, fucking Lily, the doll, jumps up on the screen and scares us. And I'm not going to lie, I kind of flinched because that shit came out of nowhere. I was literally like, what the fuck? Because mind you, I put my TV pretty loud so I don't miss like anything that they're saying. And bro, when Lily jumped out on the screen, the freaking doll, I literally flinched. I was like, oh shit, like what the fuck? See, I like that part. They're doing a little jump scare. I like that. So then she says that it's basically time to let Lily out of the playground. And she's going to release her to the people. So, okay, so it brings me back to what I was saying. So I guess they are going to move Alexa Bliss away from the playground for a few weeks maybe. And then I guess Lily's going to be in the ring. But my question would be, let's say they want to make Lily live action. Like they want to make her a real person who could play Lily. And I know a person who could play Lily. It would be a very obvious choice. But I actually think she has that charisma and she has like that character that she can play. I think it could be Nikki Cross. Because we haven't seen Nikki Cross in a while. Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss have great chemistry when they're a tag team. So why not just make Nikki Cross the real life version of Lily? Because mind you, when Nikki Cross started, Nikki Cross was that unchained, crazy woman, you know, going to the ring, screaming and jumping. So why not make Lily? I mean, why not make Nikki Cross Lily? I think it would be pretty cool, but I'm pretty sure that's just something I would love to see, but I'm pretty sure they're just going to bring Lily to the ring as the doll. And then, you know, she's going to stay in the background and just be there. But they could do that. Sure, why not make it? And then they can just lead up to her to Lily the doll slowly becoming able to transform into a human. And boom, you can have a natural, like real life Lily there. So I can see that happening. I hope it happens. Because that'd be very interesting to see. And then we can have like the Fiend or Bray Wyatt, whichever one they choose, to like come out and they look at Lily and he says some like slick stuff like, oh, I thought you were dead or something like that. So then we have Charlotte Flair versus Mandy Rose. And this match was made because Sonya Deville is appalled on how Mandy Rose keeps getting involved in Nia Jax's business and embarrassing her along the way. So then she makes the match because Charlotte Flair needs an opponent for Raw. But in the match, we also have the same referee that Charlotte Flair attacked last week, Eddie Arango. So this was interesting. But as for the match, you know, Mandy Rose, she twists Charlotte's arm around the ring. Charlotte Flair knocks her down. Mandy Rose goes for a quick pin. Charlotte kicks out. Charlotte tries to use the rope while pinning Mandy, but Dana Brooke kicks Charlotte's feet off the rope. Then Mandy drop kicks Charlotte off the top rope. Mandy whips Charlotte to the rope. Charlotte literally almost runs into the ref. She was seconds from hitting the ref, and thank God she stopped herself, because then that would have been another suspension or whatever. Charlotte then she gets mad at the ref because she thinks that he's counting too slow, because every time Charlotte tried to go for the pin, she felt that the referee was just being too slow and she's about to lose her shit to the ref. But then Charlotte Flair does a natural selection and she gets the win. It was such a throwaway match. I mean, nothing happened. Nothing crazy happened. They didn't really do anything. I mean, I can't even say anything about this match. It was just a match to show Charlotte Flair that she is back and, you know, she can wrestle. That was literally it. So then we have the main event of the night. We have Drew McIntyre versus Braun Strowman. And the stipulation is if Braun Strowman wins, he gets added to the WWE Championship at WrestleMania Backlash. And as the match, as the bell rings, both men just size each other up again, and they just start grappling around the ring, a little bit of, you know, mat wrestling. Drew then tries to tackle Braun Strowman down, but Braun Strowman doesn't feel anything. He literally just brushes it off his shoulder. So then Braun tackles Drew down. Drew climbs the ropes. Braun then slams him down. Bobby Lashley comes out and he wants to observe the match. He wants to see who his opponents will be or might be. Then Braun and Drew, to be honest, they had a hell of a night. I mean, they honestly earned their paycheck because they wrestled technically three times. You know, well, Braun actually wrestled three times, technically the handicap match, then the tag match, and now the main event. And then, you know, Drew McIntyre, you know, the tag match and the main event. So, I mean, these two men are working really hard, and it's paying off because you can see how much they just want to be on top. I love it. But so back to the match. Braun then puts a sleeper. Drew McIntyre puts a sleeper on Braun, and then Braun breaks free by taking Drew to the corner. Drew McIntyre does a belly suplex on Braun. Mind you, a belly to belly suplex on Braun. That's a 380-pound guy that he's literally throwing around across the ring almost like paper. So you know Drew McIntyre, he has some strength, because damn. Then Drew McIntyre, he tries to set up for a claymore, but then Braun Strowman power bombs Drew. Drew goes for a Glasgow kiss, and then Braun gets knocked out. Drew then gives Braun a spine buster. Drew is strong as hell, man. Again, Drew McIntyre lists off a 380-pound guy with a spine buster. Boom. Man. Oh, kudos to Drew for that. Braun then gives Drew McIntyre a superplex off the top rope. He goes for a pin. Drew kicks out. And then Lashley gets on the apron and distracts Drew McIntyre while MVP, I mean, he distracts the referee while MVP pulls Drew from the power slam that Braun Strowman is trying to do. So then Drew McIntyre gives Braun Strowman a Future Shock DDT. Okay. So then, again, of course, another surprise. T-Bar and Mace come out of nowhere to distract Drew. And then Braun gives Drew McIntyre the power slam, and Braun Strowman wins. So now the championship match at WrestleMania Backlash is going to be a triple threat match. So it's going to be Bobby Lashley versus Drew McIntyre versus Braun Strowman. And a lot of questions surface around that, because a lot of people would say that, I mean, is Braun Strowman fit enough to be champion? Of course he is. I don't know why people doubt that Braun Strowman cannot be champion. He was just a champion last year. So I don't know why they're not giving Braun Strowman so much credit. That guy, he's a monster. This guy can be a monster champion like he was. Are they going to give him the belt? Probably not. I think they're going to keep Lashley as champion, possibly till SummerSlam. That's the same thing I'm talking about with Roman Reigns being champion. They're going to milk it and just keep him champion until SummerSlam, maybe, because usually that seems to be the trend that a lot of them do. Like, if they win their match at WrestleMania, still as champion. Usually at SummerSlam is when they end up losing the belt to someone. Would I like to see Lashley lose the belt to some of these people? Yes and no. And I just contradicted myself, because I'm, like I said, I like Lashley as this champion heel. Just like I like Roman Reigns as a champion heel. But it will kind of show another, a more of a more violent, more visceral side of Lashley if, let's say, Braun or Drew won, because then he'll be even more mad. And they might, and you know, he might blame Adam Pearce for, like, hey, you made this triple threat match. What the fuck? You are the reason why I'm not champion. And he comes in more hungry, more and more vicious, and then he can beat them both down. But I don't really see that happening. I just see Bobby Lashley pinning one of these two men and just leaving WrestleMania Backlash as a champion. It doesn't really. I already have to say much about that anymore. As for my rating for tonight's show, I'll give it an 8 out of 10. It actually had a good flow. It wasn't really much, you know, wasn't really much of a waste segment. Maybe the Miz TV segment was a little waste, but other than that, it was a pretty good show. As my highlights of the night, as always, Alexa's Playground. I mean, I just love seeing it. I'm always curious of what's next for her. And I'll be honest, one of my highlights that I'm surprised I even put in was T-Bar and Mace. Like I said, they're both of them as a tag team. They're actually pretty good. They're doing more than what they were doing in Retribution. So I'm looking forward to seeing what more they can do. And as for my final highlight, I mean, Braun Strowman, he's stepping up to the game. I mean, this guy's a monster, like I literally just said a few minutes ago. He's stepping up. I mean, God, I hope he ends up doing something even bigger than what he's doing. And before I leave and finish this episode, I wanted to say, like, where the hell is AJ Styles and Almos? Where the hell have they been? It's been 3 weeks since we last seen. The last time we seen was literally at WrestleMania when they won the tag team titles. And it's been 3 weeks or 2 weeks, whatever it is. But, like, they have not been seen anywhere. What the hell? I mean, there is speculation that maybe AJ or Almos might have COVID and they're in quarantine, or they're saving them up for a surprise appearance for, like, a tag team, something that I've read online. But it's kind of like, damn, I mean, they were just crowned tag team champions, and then they're not even saying anything on Raw to kind of be like, oh, they're on vacation celebrating their championship or something, to kind of make, you know, to kind of say their names on the air. But it's weird not seeing a champion there for 3 weeks without even having the commentator say anything about them. So there's that. So I'm hopefully AJ and Almos come next week or surprise us somehow. I don't even know what's going on, but we will wait and see. That concludes this episode of Reed's Wrestling, episode 18, April 26th. I hope you guys enjoy. I hope you guys are being safe out there, wearing masks, taking care of yourself, taking care of others. And as always, I will see you next time.